All right, so there we were, cruising through the new open-air zoo, when I realized that the park was closing in like 15 minutes. Luckily, we were in my Nissan Rogue. With its powerful V6 turbo engine, well, we had time to see all the animals.
Whoa!
And outrun a few!
Drive the Nissan Rogue.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Moments like seeing my son's team cheer him on mean a lot to me. But after being diagnosed with metastatic breast cancer, or MBC, which is breast cancer that has spread to other parts of the body, they mean even more. I take Ibrance, palbociclib.
Ibrance 125 milligram tablets with an aromatase inhibitor is for adults with HR-positive, HER2-negative MBC as the first hormonal-based therapy. Ask your doctor about Ibrance and visit Ibrance.com. Ibrance may cause low white blood cell counts that may lead to serious infections. Ibrance may cause severe inflammation of the lungs. Both of these can lead to death. Tell your doctor right away if you have new or worsening symptoms, including trouble breathing, shortness of breath, cough, or chest pain. Before taking Ibrance, tell your doctor if you have fever, chills, or other signs of infection, liver or kidney problems, are or plan to become pregnant, or are breastfeeding. Common side effects include low red blood cell and low platelet counts, infections, tiredness, nausea, sore mouth, abnormalities in liver blood tests, diarrhea, hair thinning or loss, vomiting, rash, and loss of appetite.
Welcome to Hello Somebody, a production of the Black Effect Podcast Network and iHeartMedia, where we rage against the machine, where we raise our voices against injustice and stand up for justice, where we embrace hope and joy with an optimism for a brighter, more just future. Each week, I'll be dropping knowledge, whether it's a solo episode from me or a hearty discussion with esteemed guests doing great things in spaces and places of politics, entertainment, social justice, and beyond. We get real, baby. I mean, really real. We get honest. We get up close and personal for you. Yes, you. Because everybody is somebody. Before we begin, I want to give a special shout out to my team. Thank you, Sim, Tiffany, Sam, and the team over at Good Juju Studios, Erica England, Pepper Chambers, the hot one, and my social media team. Hello, somebody. This is yours truly, Nina Turner, and I am so happy that we are together again. I am excited about today's show, but my excitement is based on who my guest is, and not necessarily what we are going to be talking about, because to be quite honest, I am miffed. I am peeved. I don't know. I just like that word. I am peeved about this topic because it just makes no sense that in the United States of America, the wealthiest nation on the face of the earth, we still got to play games about whether or not we should fund college education in the same way that we fund a K-12 education. Maybe not in the same way, because we need to do some work. We need a total paradigm shift. Pre-K to college should be the minimum. The minimum. People should not have to go broke or still be paying off college debt well into their 60s and sometimes your 70s, depending on what type of job you get after college and also depending on what life throws at you. Because as we know, life can be complicated for many people. It is never, ever a straight line for most of us. Hello, somebody. With so many students getting settled into college courses and facing their bright and full futures, I just think how important it is that we discuss how we as a country can protect their dreams of not being held down by college debt. I mean, college debt is a mother, and I should know. I'm still holding on to a lot of college debt. Did you know that student loan debt in 2020 was about $1.5 trillion? You know, we got to do better. And there are some estimates as high as almost $2 trillion. We got to do better. We got to care not just about our younger people who are trying to change the trajectory of their lives by going to colleges and universities, but the millions of people who have already accumulated a lot of student debt. Hello, somebody. I'm one of those people. And they have that debt for the crime of trying to go to college or going to college, not just trying, and trying to make their lives better. We can do better and we must do better. And just the lifelong weight that we put on people who have decided to go to college, and especially this generation of students, because the cost of college continues to increase. And it is pricing certain people out of the ability to even go. I can't tell you how many folks I've talked to, both young people and young adjacent people, who just decided that college is not in their future because they cannot afford it. That should absolutely not be the case in the United States of America. So we are going to have this conversation about college for all, the impact of college debt. We are going to talk about HBCUs in particular, historically Black colleges and universities in particular, but from a global perspective, the impact of that college debt and what can be done. Now, you all know on Hello Somebody, baby, we talk that talk, we go deep, and we start to unpeel, pull back the layers and the levers, and we just have that talk. You know, just we just gonna have that talk today, and it is going to be about college for all. All right, I have a quote. You know, I feel an ancestor coming on. I feel an ancestor. And President Nelson Mandela once said, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world." Hello, somebody on that. And do I have just the perfect person to join us in this conversation? The one and only Erica England. And Erica and I have been together for a very long time. She is one of my mentees. She is extraordinary in every single way. And she is a senior at The Howard University in Washington, D.C. And Howard University is, just in case there may be somebody who's listening who might not know, and it's okay if you didn't know this, Howard University is a historically Black college. Hello, somebody. I am so excited again to have Erica here, but peeved about the topic. Because we can do better in the United States of America, and we must do better in the United States of America. And we are going to center the quote from the one and only President Nelson Mandela, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world." And there are many ways to get education, and we're going to delve into that. Erica, how are you today, darling?
How are you? I'm glad to be here.
Oh my God, I'm so glad you're here with me. You know, I'm a little bit under the weather, kind of in recovery mode. So if I sound kind of nasally, it is because I am just getting over a very severe cold. But other than that, the sun is shining and I am in a moment of gratitude because it could be so much worse. How about you?
Same here. It's sunshine where I am as well. It's beautiful outside. It's been beautiful like the past couple of days. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, me too. It has been beautiful here and in the center of the universe. I got to take something from my dear friend, Alicia Garza, who calls her home the center of the known universe. So everybody has their different center of the known universe. I'm chuckling because I just interviewed with her on her podcast. And I encourage people to check out her podcast. It's titled "Lady Don't Take No." Y'all going to fill in that blank with Alicia Garza. So you can get her podcast wherever you get podcasts. But she always talks about her home, her hometown being the center of the known universe. So I'm shouting her out right now. So Erica, okay, so let's get into this. Let's talk about, you know, college for all, and also your experience right now at Howard University. And I know that when you and I first met, you were at Howard University. You came and joined me at Our Revolution as an intern at the time, and you were working on that degree. And here we are, what has it been, 4 years later?
I think it has been 4 years later.
4 years later, yeah, still working on that degree, which is fine. I think the traditional notion that people are going to go in and come out in exactly 4 years, maybe for a certain type of student, that fits. But for most people, it doesn't fit unless you're traditional. And I put that in air quotes that our listeners cannot see. But it does not work for most people, especially if you have a job. It will take you longer than 4 years to get your degree. And I think that is outdated measure anyway. You know, people come out when they come out. Now, if 10 years later, you're still working on an associate's or a bachelor's, then, you know, maybe people gonna look at you sideways. But other than that,
they do.
You know, you kind of, you know, do what you do. As long as you are pursuing that degree, that's the most important thing. So we need some shifts on a whole bunch of stuff that we do, or that how we measure success in this country. So Howard University, tell us, share with us about your experience. I know that in past conversations you have shared that, but for the cost, you probably would have been done a lot sooner. You have had to take some breaks along the way because college is just not affordable, and you are not alone in that. You know, that was certainly the case for me, and I want you to share your story, and I'm going to share a little bit about my story as well. So let's talk about your experience, both, you know, good and bad, because again, you are a student at Howard University, and historically that means so much to be at an institution that has such historic importance. But right now there's a lot going on. There was a ransomware attack, right, against the university, and that has caused a lot of chaos for both the institution itself and also the students that attend the institution. So let's start off with the challenges, and because I want to kind of end on what's beautiful about being at a HBCU.
Yes, so Howard was my dream school. It still is my dream school. I love Howard University. I knew very well on early on that I wanted to go to Howard. I had a very, very special and dear teacher in high school who I still keep in contact with. His name is Coach Walker. And he was just like that beacon of Black African-American history. He taught an African-American history class in my high school. And he really, really encouraged me to go to an HBCU. So I started doing my research, and Howard was it for me. Like, that's where I wanted to go. I was one of those students who, you know, maybe was non-traditional in the fact that I had to leave Howard for a while, a long while. And a lot of that was due to finances. I started at Howard as a freshman years ago. When I first got to Howard, the dorm that I had signed up to stay in was an all-girls freshman dorm on campus. I got to campus. They told me, I'm sorry, we don't have any room for you. You're going to have to go to a different dorm. And they sent me to another dorm, which was off campus, upperclassmen. And much to my father's dismay, it was co-ed.
Co-ed. Oh, no. Daddy, oh, no.
He was not happy on move-in day. He was not happy. And my dad, I imitate his accent sometimes, but like, he's looking around at the guys that are moving in. He's like, why are they here? are they helping you guys move in? Why are they here? I said, no, Daddy, they're moving in too. He said, for why? What? Well, why are they here? I said, they need somewhere to live too, Daddy. He said, I thought it was all girls. I said, Daddy. No, it's not an all girls dorm. It's co-ed. What was co-ed? What? Why? He said, nope, you can't stay here. You can't stay here. We have to leave. Nope, you're not staying here. I'm like, Daddy, this is literally all I have. This is literally all I have. If I don't grab one of these rooms here, I don't have anywhere to live. So I have to take this. Like, the housing option that I wanted wasn't available to me. So I
wait, think Dad, let's not leave. Daddy was like, this ain't working for me. This don't work.
They must be the help. They helping y'all, right? They not really living here.
Exactly.
Spoken like a traditional dad. You may not have been a traditional student, but dad was definitely traditional in that. Why are they here? I love it. And your dad, talk about your dad just a little bit since we're on dad. Your dad is from?
My dad is from Sierra Leone. The reason he was even able to come from Sierra Leone to the United States was for an education lottery. My dad was very, very smart, and they used education as a way to better themselves. So some students would go to, like, you know, different parts of the world, but they sent him to the United States on an education lottery. So in our household, education was always very important. It was, you know, traditional West African father. If I got a 98, he said, where are the other 2 points? where are the other 2 points? Did anybody else get 100? Did you get the highest score? I'm like, no, I didn't get the highest, but I got an A. He said, I want the other 2 points. You should want the other 2 points.
Hello. Love it. That sounds like your dad and my grandmother went to the same school.
Yes, it did.
Oh, man. So to hear you talk about your dad in that way, it certainly reminds me of the opening quote for the show, which came from President Nelson Mandela. Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world. And certainly your dad felt that way, and he poured that into you as well.
Yeah, he did. My mother as well. Like, growing up, I didn't really have any other Black students in my class until I think I was maybe in the fifth grade, something like that. And I think my mother saw that, and she just started pushing, you know, books at me. Like, here, read this. We'd go to the library, and I'd come home with like 14 different books. And the library near my house where I grew up, they would have the little tabs on it. It was like a red, black, and yellow tab, and it said African American on it. And it was an indicator that the book was about African American history, or that the author was a Black author. So I always have a lot of those books in the hall that I brought from the library.
Yeah, that's beautiful. We definitely, you know, James Baldwin, the great novelist of the 20th century, once said, "Know from whence you came. If you know from whence you came, there's virtually nowhere that you cannot go." And you're very blessed to have been able to go to a library. A lot of these Z's don't even know what a library is, but I digress. Libraries will be in museums, you know, about 20 more years from now. But it is something beautiful about being able to go to a physical structure and take in that structure. And that entire building is dedicated to books, is where books live. And it is where, for many of us, our curiosity is piqued. It's the opportunity to travel to places, at least mentally, that you may not always be able to go to physically, and also connect with the past, the present, and in some ways, the future. So to hear somebody of your youth share library experiences is a beautiful thing. And, you know, you just made me remember that my grandmother, who was born in 1915, and this grandma I talk about all the time, all people who have ever heard any of my speeches know the Three Bones story that my grandmother, I have, you know, made a universal story. And I certainly wish that she was here to know how famous and beloved this story is. But you talking about the little tabs just made me remember when my grandmother had purchased my siblings and I a set of Britannica encyclopedias. And so, you know, I'm a Gen Xer. So for people of a certain, you know, youth, because I'm youth adjacent, let's just let the record reflect, but of a certain youth, they might say, "What the hell is a Britannica encyclopedia?" You know, but it was a search engine. You know, it was Google before Google. And although my grandmother could not, you know, read or write, she definitely understood the power of education, like so many African Americans of her generation, which was embedded in her from the generation previous and, you know, going all the way back, because African Americans, again, in this country, it was at a time illegal to teach, you know, and we think about de facto and de jure, what happens in reality and what happens in law, but it was a transgression of this country that could certainly cause you to be killed, to lose limbs, if in fact one was found even trying to help African Americans learn how to read and write. And so when I think about my grandmother buying those encyclopedias, although she was not highly educated herself, at least in from a school perspective, because she had what we call mother wit, a very, very intelligent woman, she did know it was vitally important, as your dad did for you and your siblings, that getting an education in many ways sets you free. Mind, body, and spirit. It does provide an opportunity. It's a gateway to a better life. But those encyclopedias, I remember, you know, laying in her hallway on my belly with my feet up, you know, just thumbing through the encyclopedia, daydreaming, just dreaming about, you know, what I could be, what I wanted to be. And that is vitally, you know, important. I don't think my grandmother could ever fathom how expensive colleges and universities are, and how basically a lot of people are really priced out of attending colleges and universities, and particularly universities. And if you do decide to attend, you are going to be anchored by the debt that you can carry for a very long time, depending on what type of job that you get. So let's talk about what happened along the way and share your experience with college not being affordable.
So yes, I had to leave after my freshman year. I was one of those students that it's taken me a long time to graduate. And a lot of that was because of finances. I left after my freshman year. I started working. I went back home. I started working to save money. And I don't think I fully grasped how much money I would have to save, how many hours I'd have to work to even afford a semester at Howard. And eventually I saved up money, enough money to, like, you know, pay off school debt that I had with Howard and re-enroll myself. But I had to come back up to the DC area. I'm from North Carolina, and first find housing. At the time, before I re-enrolled, I was looking for housing. And, you know, I don't talk about this with a lot of people, but there was a point in time where I didn't have housing, like, at all. I came back to the DC area. My parents don't know this, but there was, you know, points when I was, like, you know, either sleeping on a friend's couch or, you know, sleeping in my car because I couldn't afford housing yet. When I found a job in the area and had saved up a little money, I put some money down on an apartment because I also wanted to still have money for tuition. And it's the reality for a lot of students that you can't pay both tuition and pay for housing. It's got to be one or the other.
Sure.
And I had this goal, I had this dream, and I did not want to tell my parents because they would have told me to bring my behind home. They were like, no, you don't need to be doing that. You just need to come home. But I knew that I wanted to be at Howard. I knew that I wanted to finish at Howard because I'd started there. And I wanted to start and finish in the same place. I had to finish what I started.
Yeah. And that's just so crushing. And I'm sure that there are millions of students who can relate to your story. And
I know there are students now, like, since I've been back at Howard, especially because of COVID, just really made issues that students had 10 times worse. So, I mean, I've come in contact with students, you know, right now that are dealing with some of the same things that I was dealing with back then. Myself and another student have been working on finding housing for students. Howard is suffering a housing crisis, some of it due to, you know, like, financial issues in the past, but some of it, I think, due to maybe some mismanagement at Howard. We have a lot of dorms that have closed at Howard. They've leased the land off, and I think added to, like, the gentrification that's already going on in DC, and it's priced students out as well. Like, Howard students have also been, you know, priced out of housing in the DC area. Some students have, you know, reported having to commute an hour to get to campus because we're, you know, back in person. Many people have classes that are, you know, virtual, but also in person. And it's difficult to even get to the campus because of cost.
I mean, that just pains me greatly. And, you know, you would think that the administration, along with the larger community, would work to make sure that they lessen that type of impact on the students at such a great institution. And the reason by which Howard exists is to make sure that Black students could get, you know, higher education, as with all HBCUs, because Black people were locked out of other institutions. And so there's a deeper type of pride when you attend a historically Black college and universities, and many of those institutions are suffering across the country, which is problematic, you know, in and of itself. There are two here in Ohio. One is Central State, the other is Wilberforce University. Wilberforce is the private HBCU, and Central State is the public HBCU. I mean, from where I stand and sit, HBCUs, whether they're public or private, deserve to have the requisite and deep investments from the federal and state governments because of the of what those, you know, the significance of those institutions. But it's really gut-wrenching, because something can be done about that, Erica. I mean, as I listen to you, I whole bunch of ideas have come to mind that DC itself, you know, the government of DC and Howard University itself, and also the faith-based community and the civic-based community and the corporate community, can come together to make sure that that does not happen, and that students are not gentrified out of being able to afford housing. And, you know, gentrification is really a bad thing for poorer communities, and especially Black communities, when the whole character is changed and people are just priced out. The people who were originally there just priced out of being able to live there. And Howard is certainly in a prime real estate area for DC right now. And when people only see the dollar signs and they don't see the impact of gentrification, these types of problems that you are laying out. And so I want people to understand there's real flesh and blood behind what Erica is saying today. This is not something that is abstract. This is show enough real, to use one of my grandmother's words, and something should be done about that. And I really appreciate, Erica, you know, sharing your story. And again, many, many students who go away to college experience what you experience and don't necessarily tell their parents. And it took a lot of courage for you just to stay there and try to find a way to make it work. And here you are still at Howard, even though you have endured a lot and you're still enduring a lot, and you're right there. You're right there. How many classes away from actually being able to graduate?
All right, so there we were, cruising through the new open air zoo, when I realized that the park was closing in like 15 minutes. Luckily, we were in my Nissan Rogue with its powerful V6 turbo engine. Well, we had time to see all the animals.
Whoa!
And outrun a few!
Drive the Nissan Rogue.
How do we level the playing field for all entrepreneurs? 55% of white businesses survive the startup phase, while only 4% of Black businesses do the same. So I want every Black entrepreneur to know about the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative. The 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative is an award-winning program created by Shopify and Operation Hope. They're on a mission to start, grow, and scale 1 million Black businesses by 2030, driving wealth creation for the Black community. Out of 6 million employer-owned businesses in the U.S., only 2.3% have Black ownership. This program gives Black entrepreneurs tools and resources to level the playing field, from free business coaching to tailored training and extended free Shopify trial. Shopify's made a 10-year, multi-million dollar commitment to the program, and it's working. The initiative already started, supported, and engaged with over 334,000 Black businesses, helping them operate businesses that sell anything from skateboards to coffee beans to apparel. Business owners love this program. Simone Harvin, founder of SC Creative Group, says, "The 1 million Black businesses experience for me was unlike any other program I've been a part of, primarily because it was for us and it was by us. Here at Drink Champs, we are always interacting with our listeners, many being Black entrepreneurs. Shopify is one of those platforms that empowers and emboldens entrepreneurship. So chart your own path for business success with the 1 Million Black Businesses Initiative and Shopify. Bring your business to Shopify with an exclusive offer at shopify.com/BEN, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/BEN.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
After this semester, I'm one semester away. And I'm done. Yeah. I've been receiving the pre-clearance emails for graduation, which they only send to people that are like almost out the door. And it's been like a relief, you know, to see those come in my inbox, because I've fought and worked really hard to get here. And I don't think people realize, you know, the path and the struggles of like students today. Because you're not going to realize it if you're not a student
or the parent or the guardian of a student.
Right. Yeah. But like I've talked to students that have, you know, talked about like, oh, I was working 3 jobs during the summer so I could afford tuition. But also because of COVID, I was having to like help my parents, you know, pay bills. Like one of my parents is on unemployment, or one of my parents, you know, lost their job, you know, due to COVID. And so it's like they're not paying just for themselves, they're paying for their family as well. I mean, even my dad, back when he was in college, he was working to put himself through school. He was working 2 jobs, but back then he was able to work 2 jobs and afford an apartment. That's really not the case now. I don't know many students at Howard that don't have a part-time job or don't have some source of income outside of their refund checks from tuition. And I always mention this to students that I come in contact with. I've never had a refund check. My expenses for Howard were so much that I was never able to receive a refund check for the money I had for school. So I've always worked while I was in school.
Even with all that you're sharing right now, I worked my way through college too, because, you know, I come from a working poor family. I'm a first generation college graduate. You're fortunate that your second generation because of your parents, but you're still struggling even though your parents graduated from college. It takes a lot, you know, income and wealth disparities in this country are definitely attached to race, and that could be another topic for another show. But I can definitely relate to what you're saying, Erica. The difference is that because of my family situation, I did not go away to college, and Howard was actually my dream school. I don't know if I ever shared that with you, but Howard was at the top of my list in terms of the university that I wanted to attend, but because of life circumstances, I could not leave. You know, my mother had died very young at the age of 42, and people who listen to this show often know that I talk about that a lot, because people's lived experience shape who you are today, who you might become tomorrow. It is very much a part of us, and all of us have a story to tell. So I ended up staying in Cleveland, and from my public school education to going to a community college first, Cuyahoga Community College, then matriculating to the Cleveland State University. It was all local because I couldn't go away, being the oldest of 7 children and having those kind of life complications. But I would have loved to been able to go to Howard. And we know that the cost of education continues to rise, and it is pretty much almost out of reach for your generation, for millennials. It was a little more affordable for Gen Xers, but not much.
Yeah, my father, he was able to put himself through school, you know, with his scholarships and, you know, in the 2 jobs he worked, he was able to pay for both tuition and for his apartment. That's not the case for students today. Like, no. It's not the case where, oh, I can work a part-time job as a student or even work a full-time job as a student and pay for both tuition and housing. That's not the case anymore.
Right. And you still have to study too.
Yeah,
I mean,
you have to study,
right?
And it's either one or the other, and that's the issue that a lot of students are facing. Like, do I want to have housing, or do I want to have education? Because it can't be both.
That in and of itself is a shame, because we're programmed in this country: go to college, go to college, go to college, get a higher education. You get a higher education, your life is miraculously going to change. In some ways, it doesn't change miraculously, but there is a connection between, especially in the 21st century, you got to be highly skilled, highly educated. The global economy demands it. So you have to go to college or go to trade or technical education. You have to have something because you got to compete. However, at the same time that you're doing what you are told to do, that, you know, taking in the burden of going to school, at the same time, there is no guarantee, because once you graduate, you got a degree in one hand and debt in the other. And depending, again, what you studied, it may take you almost an entire lifetime to be able to pay off that debt for the crime, air quotes, of going to college to enhance yourself, your community, and your family. So I get it. You know, my son is a second generation, just like you are. And there are studies that show that if a parent goes to college or parents go to college or university, you increase the likelihood that your children and their children and children's children. So we're breaking, you know, especially for poorer communities and African-American community, from a historical perspective, we're breaking cycles. You know, I often refer to myself as a cycle breaker. So I get it, Eric. And it should not be that way. I mean, the stories that you are sharing should not be the reality where any college student, whether they're Black, white, Hispanic, you know, Asian, swirls in between, however people identify, that should not be the reality in a country that pushes college education so heavily, and at the same time can be so indifferent and cavalier to the fact that the cost of education is really pricing certain people out. And then that's where we have the class divide, because if you have to be of a certain class to be able to afford college, then we are creating a permanent underclass, of which the African American community knows a lot about. So, oh my God, Erica, we could stay on this topic for days, and we're going to revisit this. Let's call this College for All Part One.
Yeah, we need to. We can also talk about how Black women hold the most college debt.
Yeah.
And Howard is mostly Black women. There's a larger percentage of Black women at Howard and many other HBCUs. I don't think it's just Howard. It's mostly Black women, or there's a bigger majority of Black women at these HBCUs and in college in general.
Yeah, well, let's go ahead and rest right there. You know, according to a new report from the American Association of University Women, Black women carry about 20% more student debt than white women do. And researchers estimate that 1 year after graduation, white women owe about $33,000 and some change in undergraduate loans, and Black women owe on average about $41,000 and some change. And then among those with graduate school debt, white women are estimated to owe about $56,000 on average, while Black women owe closer to $75,000 on average. And so if people want to, that's the American Association of University Women, for people who want to go deeper. So already, once you cross the stage, now you're doing this to better yourself, to enhance yourself, to be marketable, to lift yourself up, yet you're rewarded, air quotes, with a whole bunch of damn debt that you may or may not ever be able to pay off. And it impacts your quality of life
Your
entire life. Yeah,
those numbers are insane. I know Howard is about $46,000 a year.
My God, it definitely should not be that way. And we can do something about it. And that is why I support College for All. Erica, I know you support College for All. It is a really big deal. We were on a presidential campaign together where Senator Bernard Sanders supports College for All, was yelling at from the rafters along with myself and so many other leaders, both activist type leaders and leaders with special titles.
And he also was the first, campaign to actually establish like an HBCU, like organizing an HBCU organizing project as well.
That's right. You were very much a part of helping to lead that on our 2020 campaign. Let's talk a little bit. Can we share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I helped with, you know, organizing other students at HBCU campuses, organized around his presidency. Also, another person on the campaign, a shout out to Delaney Vandergrift.
Yes, Delaney. Yes.
Shout out to Delaney. She led the charge on Senator Sanders' campaign and is still continuing to do that work as well around organizing, you know, Black youth and students. It's funny because whenever they talk about like how, you know, Black people vote, I notice a difference in the generations whenever they talk about like our tendencies or favoring one candidate or another. I notice a difference when it comes to like the generation that you're talking about, because I think one thing that I love about this new generation coming up, they see things as how they could be and not how they have been, and they're less likely to accept what has been.
Amen to that, baby. And I'm right there. I mean, I'm not, you know, I'm rocking with the Gen Xers, but I am that type of visionary too. And so was Senator Sanders, seeing things as they could and should be. And that's what you need in leaders. So we need to dispense with the foolishness. College and universities, there was a point in time where they were virtually free. And in areas like New York and also in California, it was virtually free. And it can be that way again. And we know, you know, people say, well, S&T, what you talking about free? Nothing is free. You're absolutely right. It's not free. So let's just go on and break this down, that we should have a social contract in the United States of America in the same way that we through tax dollars pay for K-12 education. And we need to do a better job of that. We can do the same thing, expand that and make it for pre-K to college and or technical training, vocational ed, that can be done. And that's a social contract. It is an investment, you know, in the people of this country, and it should be done. It can be done. We're spending a whole lot of money on the military industrial complex. We got a whole bunch of less than 1%ers who are not paying any money in federal taxes. Let's go ahead and tax the wealthy. Let's take some of that military industrial complex money and put it on the education side of the ledger, and we can do those things. And let's absolutely have a special, unique carve out for historically Black colleges and universities, whether they are public or private in these United States of America. Eric, I believe and know that we can do those kinds of things. And so as we wrap up part one, and I promise you all, we are going to dig into this a little more, and let's just go ahead and have a part two about College for All. Erica, in our remaining moments together, what are three things, and you can frame it any way you want, you don't have to take my frame, that you would want people to know and to understand and maybe even do in understanding the impacts and the unique struggles of being a college student in the 21st century, and especially in the face of COVID?
I would say three things that are unique to students now is that many of us are working, and working all kinds of odd hours. I think it used to be that was an option, but now it's not. It's not really an option anymore. Unless you come from a family with means, 9 times out of 10, you're a student with a job. I would say the second thing is we have got to do something about housing students. There shouldn't be a reason that you're enrolled full-time or part-time as a student at a university and you're sleeping in your car.
That's right.
And that's the case for, I've come across students that's their reality right now. You know, we're working to help them. And shout out to some of the alumni at Howard that have been doing the work to house students at Howard that need it. And I would say the third thing is that even if we cancel student debt, which I pray to God that we do, what happens after that? What about tuition itself? How are we going to regulate tuition itself so that it can be more attainable for more people, especially for Black students?
You bring up a really good point that the entire student loan, student debt universe needs to be reimagined, because it's one thing to cancel student debt. I think there's about 1.7 $1 trillion worth of that debt, but how is the system itself going to change, period, so that people are not accumulating that debt to begin with? Because you can cancel student debt right now, but unless you change the system, there's going to be another set of student debt coming up. And I totally agree with you. And the federal government can regulate that and do that a better way and not allow these private banks and other financial institutions to charge students what they're charging them. And the Fed set the interest rate for student loans. So we can absolutely do a new thing in the United States of America. So you all have heard it here from the scholar herself, Erica England, sharing a portion of her journey, which I'm sure so many folks can relate to. I can relate to in many ways as well. She said that she wanted to make sure that we all realize that students have to work, and many students have to work 2 and 3 jobs just to make ends meet, that sometimes they have to choose between being able to continue to go to school or having a roof over their head. The second issue that she brought up was housing, that students should be able to be housed. And she's using her experience at Howard University to illustrate that gentrification is having a severe negative impact on students because they're being priced out of even being able to live around this historic university. And we have to do something about that. That does not have to be the reality in the United States of America. And third, that the entire system itself needs to be reimagined so that future generations don't bump up against this and we find ourselves right back where we started from, which does not work for anybody. So Erica, you are absolutely extraordinary in every single way, and you know how much I love you. I want to end the way that we started, with the great President Nelson Mandela, who once said, "Education is the most powerful weapon which you can use to change the world." Let's get to changing the world. And one way we can do that is to change the way higher education is financed in the United States of America. Create an environment where we have pre-K to college to tech school to voc ed, because not everybody wants to go to a traditional college or university, and that is a beautiful thing too. Let's make that requisite investment. Let's cancel student debt, which the president of the United States of America can do right now. The president before him could have done the same thing. The president before that president could have done the same thing, and the president before that, and so on and so forth. The Department of Education, using that power, the president can wipe out student debt right now, and the United States of America has the authority to do a new thing in rethinking how we finance and fund education, along with working with the states. Education is indeed the most powerful weapon which we can use to change the world. I agree with President Nelson Mandela wholeheartedly. I know that Erica agrees with him as well. So let's get to changing the world, starting with college for all.
Coming, the pain is numbing. Try to shoot for the stars if you gon' aim for something. Embrace the love for your brother and sister. Unity's the missing brush, we need to puzzle this picture. Let's paint it up, frame it up for the world to see. Hang the hatred up. Enough is enough, is enough. Making changes on us. Interna, her voice is the truth. Her wise words inspire the youth to keep their eyes on the roof. It's the end, never give up, keep conquering goals. To the eye, intelligence, silver, wisdom is gold. Back to the end, now is your time, stay firm, don't fold. To the A, all you need is the 3 bones, that's what Granny said. Now I'ma make sure these words from Granny spread. For all of here, just give her your ear. She can take you to the promised land, I swear. World peace is what they fear. From Queens to Cleveland, Ohio, we here. Famous.
good. The chocolate girls unite, baby. Yes, we do.
Hello, Somebody is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
You know a spot, but not just a spot, the spot. Actually, with the 2023 Nissan Frontier, you know a bunch of them. But the key to these great spots? Being able to reach them in the first place. Your spot is out there. Find your frontier in the 2023 Nissan Frontier with standard 310 horsepower, advanced tech, and 281 pound-feet of torque.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.